Well, this is the time to hear from our judicial council members about their liaison with our many courts in the state. We're going to start with Commissioner Sue Alexander for her report.
Yeah, I met with two courts between the last meeting and now. I met with the Amador Court on July 22nd. I met with their PJ, who is Susan Harlan, and their CEO, Barbara Cockerham. Judge Harlan also introduced me to the other judge in their court. Amador is a two-judge court. Stephen Hermanson, who was just elected and took office in January. Amador is a Cluster 1 court. They have two judges, and they also have a part-time contract 1058 commissioner. Their judicial officers handle their regular calendars, but if they have any lengthy trial, they ask the assigned judges program to come in and handle their lengthy trials. Like other small courts, they reciprocate with their neighboring court and do get some assistance from Alpine when they need somebody on a short-term basis. Their courthouse has three departments, but only two of them have access to in-custody defendants, and so when they bring in an assigned judge, they have to shift out of their regular courtrooms, go sit in a different courtroom, and rearrange their assignments in order to accommodate the visiting judge. Though not ideal, their facility is adequate, and they are using some of their fund balances to improve their jury assembly room. Storage for them is going to become an issue. Amador currently share storage with Calaveras County, but Calaveras County is getting a new courthouse. And once Calaveras County's courthouse opens, then Amador is going to be solely responsible for their storage space. They are working with the AOC on an imaging project to try to reduce the amount of paper they have so they can reduce the amount of storage they'll need. Amador is very concerned about the fallout from AB 566. Historically, they have had positions filled by employees that they now fill by contractors. An example is last year their family court service director, which is really their mediator and probate investigator, left. They put out a request to have somebody apply for that job. They could not find anybody that was qualified that met the job requirements that are required by the statute. Eventually, they were able to contract with somebody that is an individual that did meet those requirements. They have a similar situation with their 1058 commissioner, so they contract now with a retired commissioner that retired from another county to cover that position. It's not that they don't want to hire somebody. It's that they have difficulty finding somebody in a small community that meets the requirements because both of these are part-time positions. Amador County has had a budget reduction of approximately 40%. In 2008, their budget was $3.3 million, and now it's closer to $2 million. They've met that by having 27 furlough days over a two-year period, which resulted in a 6.3% reduction. They also implemented a retirement incentive program, which resulted in some savings, but they feel they've lost a lot of their brain trust because the people that were experienced were the ones that retired, and they have hired two new people, but, of course, those people need to be trained and learn the system. In a small court, everybody has to know how to do everything, and so it does take longer to train people than clerks that are specialized in one area. The staff reduction, they feel, has resulted in longer waits, both on the phone, at the counter, and for hearings to help. And they feel especially this is in areas which are not time required, so a lot of their waits are in areas like family law. They also have noticed that their staff reductions has resulted in an increased amount of absenteeism and more stress-related illnesses. Their absenteeism rate runs between 15 and 20%. The AOC HR department is a big help to them as they are in labor negotiations as we speak. The self-help and facilitator staff cannot serve all the people that they want to serve in a timely fashion. In their community, they have very limited public transportation. So they try to coordinate all the matters involving the same litigant on the same day so that they can come and do all their business at one time. They also try to coordinate things like interpreter services and other support services so they can maximize the use of those people. The workload study, they feel, doesn't match their staffing needs. According to the workload study, they need 25 people, and they think they need closer to 31. Their high was 36. They especially have an issue with the Project 90 staff, because Project 90 staff includes their IT person, their HR person, their finance people, their research attorney, and even their custodian. And so they need at least one person in each of those functions, and that's more than they're allocated under the workload study. And even with one person in each of those positions, if anybody's gone on vacation or on extended leave, they have no backup. They also think that there needs to be more consistency in the categories with regard to the reporting requirements if the workload study is now going to be used for funding. An example they gave me was that they have a prison in their community which is expanding. So they have a larger number of habeas petitions than some other counties may have. And that's not considered in the workload study. They also feel that long trials are especially onerous on the small courts, and that even though there is a weighted study, for example, felonies versus misdemeanors in the workload study, there is nothing that captures how much time is actually spent in things like jury trials, which is a very time-consuming for them. Their case management system is the court view management system, and they and Nevada County are the only ones using it. They're trying to enhance that system to accommodate e-filing and imaging, and they're also trying to improve their basic computer services. Since security funding was shifted to the sheriff, they are receiving the same level of service that they were receiving in the past. However, in the past, they used security money to pay for things such as equipment, repairs, and supplies, and now they're paying for those. The sheriff's providing the staff, but they're still paying for the equipment, repairs, and supplies. Their main issue is to keep their fund balance at 1%. That is less than what they would be required to do to pay out their employee benefits that are on the books right now. They have now required people to take the time off so they can't accrue benefits because they don't have the funds to pay them should people take them unexpectedly. I was impressed with the leadership at the Amador Court. They are trying to do their best for themselves, their litigants, their staff, and their community under these difficult situations. Then, 2 weeks later, I met with Glenn Court, also a two-judge court. I met with their presiding judge, Peter Tweed. Glenn. And I met with their CEO, Janelle Bartlett, their finance officer, Julie Leach, and their lead clerk, Tammy Gilmore. I also met with Judge Don Bird, who I think is on every facilities committee that we have. And he did share their facilities plan and walked me around the building and explained where the new facility would be and how everything was going to be rearranged. Glenn is also a Cluster 1 court, having two judges and a part-time 1058 commissioner that they share with three other counties. They rarely use assigned judges because they don't have a courtroom to put them in. They do reciprocate with neighboring counties to cover calendars and to meet other judicial needs, such as things like EPO duty and covering for search warrants and those kinds of things. Glenn does have an approved courthouse project. They're in the schematic design phase. I'm not exactly sure where that is in the whole thing. And they hope to break ground in 2012. The project will take approximately... 2015. Sorry about that. The project will take approximately 2 years to complete. When it's done, they will be ADA compliant. Right now, they can't take someone that is on a stretcher down in their elevator. They're adding two courtrooms, some holding cells, and will now have secure access for their inmates, which now walk through the courthouse. They do have gang issues, so they need holding cells so they don't have the same gang members in the same location. They're adding interview rooms, jury facilities, and more space for staff and records. Once that's completed, they will close their Orland courthouse and their self-help resource center, both of which are leased space, and everything will be heard in Willows. They now have one courtroom in two different locations. Since they're adding to and remodeling their historic courthouse, they're going to need to leave that courthouse 2 months before construction begins and then move back when it's completed. This is going to require two moves instead of one. Unfortunately, this is going to happen a year too late for them because they have to reduce their fund balance by June of 2014, and they're not going to be able to move until 2015. And they have been saving and holding on to that money in order to pay for moving costs, a new case management system, and to replace their telephones. Their case management system is a COBOL system, and their phones periodically stop working. The cost of the two moves is prohibitive for replacing these, but they won't have the funds available when the moves actually occur. They felt they did a good job of maintaining their fund balance, mainly through their enhanced collection program, so they would have the funds to handle the expenses of the moves that won't be covered by the building project. Just to feel like they're taken away from them right before they really need them. They're looking for a way to lodge the funds with the Court Facilities Architectural Fund, which is administered by the Department of Finance and supposedly holds on to the funds and then will give them back to the court for identified expenses that have to be identified prior to giving the funds to the architectural fund. If this is available, they anticipate it's going to be a very time-consuming and cumbersome process to manage these funds back and forth between the agencies. I noticed later on our agenda, we have under the new court-funded facilities request procedure an issue with regards to this Department of Finance funds, and that may help them in the future if that goes through. Again, they like Amador, feel it would be better that they not receive the share of the $60 million because their share was very small if they could have kept a larger fund balance. This doesn't mean they don't need money for operations. Their budget was around $3.5 million and now it's $1.8 million. Luckily, they've been able to downsize by attrition and their enhanced collection program has provided fund to avoid furloughs in their county. In 2012-13, they collected about $1.5 million in their enhanced collection fund, and they were able to retain about $450,000 of that, which they used to fund 6.2 FTEs. They have reduced their clerk's hours. They've reduced their court reporting to mandated cases only. They have a part-time self-help attorney that also acts as their family law facilitator. And instead of having any paralegal staff in their self-help center, they move their traffic clerk from traffic to self-help when the self-help center is open, and then they have other clerks backfill the traffic. They were hoping to expand their self-help center to 5 days a week, but presently have a hard time keeping it open for two. With regard to the move, they also were working on a file destruction project, so they wouldn't have to move so many files back and forth. But that is one of the things that they've eliminated because they had to lay off the two temporary clerks that were doing that project. Again, they believe as a small court the workload study doesn't work for them. They also believe that the number of staff that they're required to have is less than is actually needed, and again, it focuses again on that Project 90 staff. They share services with other counties. For example, they use IT services from Butte, which they get when available, are not needed in Butte. Their research attorneys are in Sacramento, which they have access to when Sacramento doesn't need them. And Riverside helps them with the procurement, and they're helping them with trying to get a new phone system. They rely on the AOC for their HR services, and they also have contract negotiations beginning. Even though weighted, they don't think that their filings match what the workload study shows. They have a unique situation with their district attorney. He files very few misdemeanors. One month this year, he filed one. He mainly files felonies. The numbers of felonies have increased, and the number of misdemeanors have decreased by about 40% each. The felonies are going up 40, and the misdemeanors are going down 40. They are also concerned that because misdemeanors can be filed within a year, that they will end up with a whole bunch of them on their doorstep all at one time. Because of the types of felony charges being filed, there are less time waivers, there's more cases going to preliminary hearing, and in a court that used to do one jury trial approximately a month, they are doing approximately one jury trial per week with two judges. This has also resulted in more appeals. Those, the appeals go to the third DCA. They have to prepare the records, which increases the strain on their staff and increases their costs in preparing the record. The remainder of their case types are fairly consistent. At the time I met with them, the working group had not yet discussed the plan for funding for Cluster 1 courts. They think it's better if the workload study is not applied to the small courts. The Glen Court has experienced reduced security based on the security funding being transferred to the Sheriff's Department. When they asked about this, the county is in the process of requesting an accounting from the Sheriff of how those funds are being spent. they're not really as concerned about how these funds are being spent as long as they get their level of service back. The program that has helped the Glenn County Court most is the Enhanced Collection Program. As I mentioned before, they have been able to use that to avoid furloughs and to maintain salaries and benefits for six employees. The message they want to share with the Judicial Council and the legislature is they can't survive with the 1% fund balance. They propose that at least there be a simplified system for how to ask for additional funding for what they consider unusual expenses, and that without influx of money on July 1st of 2014, they're not sure that they can meet their monthly expenses for that month. It was a pleasure to meet with them. They were very welcoming and informative, and all considering they're trying to manage their cases, they're hearing all case types. There are some delays, and they're trying to meet the needs by doing things in the way that best suits their community. Thank you, Chief.
Chief.
Thank you, Commissioner Alexander. Yes, Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. Commissioner Alexander, I wondered if during the course of your conversations with Amador and Glenn and the difficulties that you've outlined for us today, whether or not it came up as to their lines of communication or their effective ability to convey these very serious problems to their local legislators? Is there that line of communication?
I'm not sure about Amador. I didn't. Glenn has, they're much more, or at least they shared with me, the fact that they're very involved with their, all branches of their, you know, their board of supervisors, their legislators, and all parts of their elected legislative branch.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Judge James Bramblin on the phone reporting on his liaison meeting.
Thank you, Chief. I always have to be careful because the mute button and the off button are next to each other on this phone.
Thank you. And just, Judge Bramblin, can you speak up? I think some of us are having a hard time hearing you. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Chief. I would have preferred to give this report in person, but some of the concerns of our San Diego colleagues are very time-sensitive, and I could not defer this until the next council meeting. On August the 9th, I met with Presiding Judge Robert Trent Acosta, Assistant Presiding Judge David Danielson, and Executive Officer Michael Roddy for approximately 90 minutes, and then I met with many members of their executive committee for another 90 minutes. I cannot possibly present all of the information I learned over 3 hours in a 5-minute presentation, so I will highlight in some detail today the top three issues which are of the greatest importance to the San Diego Superior Court and mention their other viewpoints whenever any of the remaining issues come before the council in the future. The San Diego Superior Court is the second largest in the state with 131 judges and 23 commissioners. They currently have 6 vacant judge positions. This court has been particularly hard hit by the economic downturn. Their revenue was down $35.5 million from last year, and they were forced to seek $5 million in a cash advance from the council in December. They are also a donor court under the new WAFM allocation standard. San Diego Superior Court has had to reduce services significantly, including the closure of 1 courthouse and 11 courtrooms. They have had to lay off 40 employees in the last year, reduce the workforce by approximately 170 employees, and had imposed an unpaid work furlough, which was recently suspended with the receipt of one-time monies at the end of fiscal year 12-13. In order of priority, technology is at the top of their list. The San Diego Superior Court invested over $22 million into CCMS with the expectation that they would have a robust, functional, and adaptive case management system. They currently use V3 in their civil, small claims, and probate operations, but the remainder of their systems are antiquated and many are tied into the county's mainframe. The County of San Diego had been charging the court $8,000 per month in maintenance fees for their share of the upkeep of this system. But now that the county has gone to a different system, the court is going to be the only party residing on that system, and the court's maintenance fees will be increasing to $80,000 per month. They only have one IT staff member for the support of their family law system, and he is retiring soon. There is no local Plan B. They are awaiting direction from the council and the development of the statewide technology plan. Under very similar circumstances, this council elected to fund the replacement of the Kings County Superior Court case management system using the trial court trust fund's 2% emergency reserve. Unlike Kings County Superior Court, which could replace its entire system for $2.11 million, the San Diego Superior Court's expenses to replace their case management system would totally deplete the entire 2% reserve for the entire branch. San Diego judges fear that without an equitable method for allocating technology funding for all of the courts, their infrastructure will fail. They want a defined, statewide, equitable technology model for case management systems with a funding mechanism similar to TCBAC's WAFM model rather than the current ad hoc method in which some courts are now seeking funding. Without question, trial court trust fund money is inadequate to fund the replacement of all of our case management systems. We need to find another adequate and stable funding stream. These judges also point out that nearly every specially created statewide computer system has resulted in expensive failure. They are concerned about our image with the legislature and the public in these regards. The political campaign for case management funding is huge. We have to be able to demonstrate competence in designing and implementing more moderate and viable technology projects. San Diego judges strongly recommend that the branch not utilize a single one-size-fits-all system that is capable of communicating with all other justice partners in all other counties. Instead, they encourage the council to seriously consider an off-the-shelf system used by major businesses. It is critically important to them that they have a reliable and functional case management system. They don't need a Ferrari. They want a Ford that they can afford to maintain. Many of their filings consist of manually filed paper documents that are then scanned. If their systems fail and they have to go back to manual dockets and entries, they no longer have the staff to perform these duties. It is more important to them that their internal CMS systems can talk to each other rather than be able to send and receive data from other courts throughout the state. Suffice it to say that investing in technology is critical to the branch's future. Number two on their priority list is their increasing structural deficit caused by underfunded retirement and health care costs. It appears that the state provides retirement and health care cost increases to employees in the other two branches that it does not provide to the judicial branch, which is causing a serious structural deficit in San Diego and in other courts across the state. The San Diego Superior Court spends $37 million for retirement and $17 million for health care annually to subsidize their employees' retirement and health care benefits. And this amount is expected to increase next year by another $2.5 to $3 million. Diverting funds to pay for employees' retirement and health care costs eats away at other core services and greatly reduces the public's access to justice. San Diego judges are also concerned that the legislature expects us to demonstrate expanded access to justice with their reversal of $60 million in previous cuts to the judicial branch. Yet, these health care benefit expenses cost the courts more than their pro rata share of the additional $60 million provided this year. Statewide security concerns ranks number three on their list of priorities. with the passage of AB 109, the so-called California Criminal Justice Realignment Act, the responsibility of funding security for the courts was transferred to the counties. This was both good and bad. In the past, courts had to negotiate with their sheriffs, which was cumbersome. But at least the courts had the power of the purse, and if the sheriff's department wasn't upholding its responsibilities, the courts could withhold funding. Now that funding comes from the counties, courts have little recourse other than to sue their sheriff if the sheriffs are not providing adequate security. Many counties don't trust the state, and many courts are now getting stuck in the middle trying to act as mediators. Although courts have generally had good working relationships with their sheriff, courts are beginning to question some of the sheriff's charges. San Diego judges are concerned by other courts' recommendation to seek BCTs for sheriff security. Any attempt to increase security funding by way of BCPs should be done by the sheriff and not by the court. We should not be expending our modest political capital to benefit another entity. We can and should support their BCP request, but we should not be given the laboring oar on this issue. There is also concern that any additional funding to our branch for security expenses may place upon us the ongoing responsibility to ensure those services in the future without also providing adequate power to properly negotiate those services or control the inevitable increases in those costs. The other issues that our San Diego colleagues raised involve obtaining adequate training for diminishing clerical staff, especially post-AB 109, advocating for increased appointments of family law practitioners to the bench, correcting inequities in retirement plans, particularly for younger judges and judges who will have served more than 20 years on the bench before becoming eligible to draw retirement funds, using voice recorders in courtrooms where court reporters are no longer staffed, filling unfulfilled judicial vacancies, expanding the use of assigned judges to backfill behind absent judges, serving on CJUR, AOC, and Judicial Council Advisory Committees without charging this use against their allotment, and lastly, increasing training for dependency lawyers. The San Diego bench is gifted with many talented jurists, and I'm glad to have been reappointed as their liaison next year. I look forward to continuing this dialogue. That concludes my report, and I would like to commend the outgoing Judicial Council members for their service and wish them the very best. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Brandlin. Next, we'll be hearing from Judge Dave DeAlba on his report with his liaison county.
Thank you, Chief. I had the pleasure of meeting with the San Joaquin bench on July 31st of this year. It's the third court that I've visited or have visited since the initiation of the program, Chief, and I compliment you on the program and your vision of having council members meet with local courts. I met with the presiding judge, Dave Warner, the assistant presiding judge, Les Holland was there, the CEO, Rosa Junquera, who we have met, was there. And by the way, when I asked Rosa, who was at the meeting, I said, how long have you been with this court, and how long have you been the CEO? She's been the CEO 10 years, she'd been the CEO or assistant CEO 6 years before that, and she has served that court for a total of 29 years, which I was a little surprised because we all saw and met how youthful she is when she came before this court. It brought back old memories for me to go back to Stockton, to the old courthouse there as a deputy attorney general in the 1980s. I had occasion to try various cases in that courthouse. And not much has changed. It's basically a dilapidated building. It is a horrible public edifice that it is a courthouse, but it has inadequate parking. The elevators don't work. The carpeting is coming off of the floors. It is, in all respects, inadequate. The staff was telling me that, like many courthouses, and that of my colleague next to me, Judge Rosenberg in Yolo County, inmates are moved publicly in the hallways. The air conditioning has chronic problems. Recently, it's broken down throughout the summer. And as you or those of us that live and work in the Great Central Valley know, no air conditioning anywhere is a problem, and they've worked under conditions where they've had measured 86 degrees in the courthouse at times. They only have four public elevators to serve the entire courthouse, and one has been out for an entire year because they can't find replacement parts, and the parts had to be remanufactured because obviously the vendor, the person who originally installed the elevators, is not around anymore. And then recently, the second elevator went down. The good news is that they expect a new courthouse, and that they're in the final stages of the drawings for the new courthouse, which will be right next to the old courthouse. They expect to be the subject of a bond sale next spring, and they expect groundbreaking to occur next fall. And they're hopeful that the new courthouse will be completed by the summer and or fall of 2016. Now, the problems of San Joaquin and their fiscal emergencies have been well documented. We all know they've been before this council on at least two occasions. And for those of us that were here, you'll recall that in December of 2011, the council approved emergency funding, which included a approximately $900,000 loan. Shortly thereafter, at the direction of the council, the court or the administrative office of the courts deployed what we call a CART team, a court-assisted response team, that basically went in to help and offer recommendations as to the management of the court. They made 58 recommendations, which San Joaquin enthusiastically adopted and or implemented as soon as they could, and they reported back to this council 6 or 7 months later in June of 2012 on the status of those recommendations. Regrettably, they had to return just a few months later in October of last year with a second request for emergency funding, and some of you might recall that meeting, but the result of it was the council directing San Joaquin to utilize the initial loan that we had made to them because it was still in the bank, so to speak. So they did. They have responded by dedicating that $900,000 sum towards a new case management system because, like many courts, of course, their existing case management system for criminal and traffic cases is antiquated. And again, like many courts, they rely on the county, the old mainframe system. It's costly to maintain. It's cobalt-based. Their small IT staff is taxed because they're constantly trying to keep this thing afloat. So they're using that $900,000 towards a $1.5 million case management system, and they expect to sign an agreement with Justice Systems, Inc., which is one of the master service agreement contracts that Judge Herman's workstream groups have negotiated. And when they do, they expect to save $1 million a year just by changing their case management system. When I met with the judges and in the conversations that I've had with the presiding judge, Dave Warner, who has been nothing but amicable and collegial and open, I informed them of the council's concern that small claims cases in that county had been suspended. We spoke at length about that. They have stopped the small claims hearings since September of last year. So about a year they've gone without hearing small claims cases. But they explained to me that they have accepted the filings of small claims cases. What has been suspended are hearings on small claims cases. And they have about 1,100 cases that are backlogged, small claims cases, that are waiting to be heard. And when I spoke to the judges about this, it was very clear, and they wanted to say loudly and clearly that it's not for lack of judicial commitment and dedication to hearing those cases. The judges are happy to volunteer and help and work extra or after hours or whatever it takes to hear those disputes. The problem is staff. They don't have enough staff to prepare the paper, to calendar the cases, to do what it takes to present a case to us as judges and to the judges in San Joaquin to resolve those matters. So they do have a plan to start up with the small claims, and I don't know if Judge Werner has publicly announced it, and I'm not certainly going to say anything before he does to his community, but they're hopeful that very soon, the next 30, 60 days, that they'll resume hearing small claims cases. Their staff has suffered. That is cutbacks. I heard Judge Brandlin just say that San Diego County Superior Court has suffered a cutback of 170 employees. Well, San Joaquin County has lost 100 employees, and they're nowhere near the size, of course, of San Diego. 100 employees is 33% of their staff has been lost due to, of course, budget. And their priority is, of course, is to bring back those folks, their staff, when budget issues change. And everything that permeates that courthouse and the administration of that courthouse is budget, budget, budget. So, Chief, in sum, I found the judges of San Joaquin County to be a very dedicated group that is dedicated to serving their community. They are in the hands of very able leadership. One of the things that was of interest to me when I met with them, because they are a relatively smaller court, that is 29 judges, about a $28 million operation. And one thing that stood out to me when they introduced themselves to me was that half the group, it seemed to me, was either a former presiding judge or a former assistant presiding judge. The point is that they're well-versed and experienced in court administration. And that has been obviously a positive for them. They are very, very collegial. They made a point of telling me that even though at times they have some major differences of opinions on various issues, but that the tradition in their court is to trust one another, whoever it is in the capacity of leadership, and to respect their differences, and that they remain irrespective of whatever it is, budget or ideological or whatever their differences may arise, that their primary concern is always serving their community. So, Chief, it was a pleasure to meet with them, and thank you for appointing me to be their liaison.
Chief, thank you, Judge Diablo. Judge Hardcastle, then Justice Hull.
Chief, I just wanted to share with you and the counsel, and Justice Miller probably has this same email. He and I received an email from one of the judges in San Joaquin 2 days ago, and I just want to share the contents with you based on Judge Diablo's report. It says, I just heard from our PJ that we are working on a plan to get small claims back up and running. Now that we're able to hire back about 17 legal process clerks, we're also happy. Thanks to the new funding model, nice to get some good news for a change.
Thank you for that postscript, Justice Hall.
Yes, thank you, Chief. My comment also deals with small claims, and we hear this from every liaison report, but Judge D'Alba's out of San Joaquin is as extreme as they come. And I just wanted to make the observation that it's unfortunate in a way that these have come to be referred to as small claims actions, because being small claims doesn't mean in a community that they're unimportant claims. And there's a substantial population in any given community, any given county, that between small businessmen and people dealing with small businesses, landlord-tenant disputes, disputes between property owners, that these really, in a very major way, are something of a lifeblood to the resolution of claims that can be heard in small claims court, and that cutting them back so severely, unfortunately, necessarily, because of the lack of funding, really can do some serious damage to the fabric of the community. And we talk a great deal in the council about access to justice, and usually it's with all capital letters, access to justice, but access to justice includes providing a forum for people in the community to resolve these claims in an expeditious way, and it's a serious problem to any given community when they're not able to do that. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Justice Hall. Next, we'll hear from you, I believe, on your liaison report.
Thank you, Chief. I should have just kept talking there, but my number one, I need to. I'm reporting on my meeting with Judge Lori Earle and Christina Volkers, the court executive officer for Sacramento County. And I need to apologize to them and to the council. I talked to them in May. I had intended to have this report before you, at least before the summer was out. Other events intervened, but I do want to report on our meetings now. And I'll say, first of all, that you will hear echoes of what we've heard this morning concerning the problems in Amador, Glen, San Diego, San Joaquin, and the problems of other counties that we've heard in other liaison reports. And so, just as a general statement, I think, and happily Judge Earle is with us, she can speak for herself momentarily, I think she would agree that the things that we've heard from Judge Brandlin concerning San Diego and others certainly apply to Sacramento as well. The numbers, first of all, Sacramento County Superior Court has 61 judges. They have four vacancies. They have four commissioners with two vacancies. They have four referees with one vacancy and six AB 159 positions. I would note that the court has been under, putting aside judicial officers, the court has been under a hiring freeze for a full 5 years now. As for court personnel, there have been 29 layoffs since May of 2012 and numerous retirements, for a total personnel attrition of, in 2012, of 95 employees. The court has 623 employees, whereas its need is set at 858 employees. Unfortunately, as we've heard, and as with most courts, the funding picture can only be considered grim. The court has a $9 million structural deficit that was covered in the current fiscal year by reserves that will not be available after July 1, 2014. The court will only get approximately $3 million of the additional $60 million allocated by the legislature this year, and so the only option for the upcoming year will be further layoffs. The court projects that its revenue for fiscal year 2014-2015 will fall $9 million short of its expenses. As to the courthouse, I did not visit the courthouse because I served in that same courthouse from 1995 to 98, and it was really suffering from its age even then, and things I'm sure have not gotten any better. But they do have a new courthouse project that at least is in its nascency, if you will. The new courthouse project has been placed on the indefinite delay list. The parcel where that courthouse will stand has been located in the old Southern Pacific Rail Yards right there in downtown Sacramento, which is the subject of a great deal of hopeful development by the city. The parcel has been identified, and the court expects to have a contract for the property soon, after which it will require additional SB 1407 funding in order to proceed from there. Case management, we've heard about. The court is using some AB 109 money for technology and criminal case management, allowing it to depend less on use of the county technology systems. As to a replacement family law case management system, the court anticipates using a portion of their available reserves, as long as they are available. The court eventually anticipates using one of three vendors under a master services agreement. The court is using V3 for civil and probate case management, but will not be able to do so indefinitely, and the court anticipates that in 3 to 5 years, it will have to move to a different system. Thus, second only to concerns about the court's structural deficit, technology is its largest worry. The court has not suffered any courthouse or courtroom closures as yet, although there has been some restriction on small claims actions. The court also has suffered a major loss in their family law self-help centers. The court is currently in negotiations on new labor contracts. We've heard about security this morning in the other counties. Similar to what we've heard, the Sheriff's Department receives all the security money, but in part due to raises in the Sheriff's Department, the department will end up approximately $2 million short of what they require, and they are asking the court to cover that $2 million expenditure, or they, that being the Sheriff's Department, will have to reduce security services to the courthouse. Perhaps under the heading of innovations, Judge Earl noted that Judge James Mize has set up what is referred to as a one-day dissolution court, where parties who have no dispute between them and just want to be divorced can come to court, where law students help them fill out the necessary paperwork, after which they appear before Judge Mize. They have a short hearing, and he enters an order of dissolution. The program began March 1st, and Judge Mize is hearing about 10 such cases a week. Lastly, Sacramento County is one of the pilot courts for the so-called Sergeant Shriver grant that provides money for appointed counsel for defendants in unlawful detainer cases. This has had the perhaps unintended consequence of increasing immensely the court's workload, because the defense bar is much more aggressive with discovery and trials, for instance, but the grant is not enough to cover these increased expenses. While most cases settle, the increased costs have come from having to manage these cases. The court is 2 years into a three-year pilot program. And, Chief, with your permission, I would invite Judge Earl to add or disagree, if you wish, to any of my comments.
Thank you, Justice Hull. We have been able, I think, with the new $60 million that our portion of that, we have been able to devote an increase in our family law self-help center, which I think is vital. We, like many counties, the percentage of pro per litigants in family law is about 75%. And when we, through budget reductions, had to reduce our self-help services, it created, as you can imagine, a bottleneck, and also clearly deprived those self-represented litigants of some tools in order to be able to maneuver the family law system. So we have increased staffing to the Family Law Self-Help Center. We have been able to rehire on a temporary basis some of our formerly laid off employees in order to address significant backlogs we have in case processing in all areas of our court. So there is some positive news from Sacramento in terms of how we are spending the increased funding that we got. But as you have so aptly put, next year will not be the same. Our court security issue, we believe we have resolved. One of the issues related to court security is that the government code section provides that the Sheriff's Department is not allowed to spend the money on anything other than court security and cannot be used for general county operations. And when we pointed out to them that they seem to have underspent their budget by almost $1 million in the previous year and wondered why that money wasn't available to offset the underfunding they find themselves in this year, I think we came to an agreement, at least for this year only, but It is a concern moving forward. The reason for these increased costs to the Sheriff's Department is related to negotiated raises to their employees and the funding, I think, that's allotted for court security to the state will not keep up with those raises. And so we need to find a long-term solution in the future. But I think we've resolved our problem at least for this year. So thank you very much, Justice Hull.
Thank you, Justice Hull. Thank you to all the Judicial Council presenters. I just want to say a few things about this. The Judicial Council Liaison Program that was put in place by Justice Miller and you Judicial Council members voting to decide to do this and do the extra work of traveling to these courts. As many of you recall, years ago we did site visits, but because of funding reductions, we no longer visit the court. So this program of liaison with Judicial Council members to the courts to meet is invaluable to us to bring the information of what's happening out in our 58 diverse courts to us. And as we've been hearing these reports over some period of time now, we know what the theme is. We know that when $1 billion is taken from a judicial branch that only has $3 billion to begin with, that's only, as we saw yesterday, 1.5% of the general fund, and yet our work continues unabated. What we see now under the list of worries and concerns about a third co-equal branch of government, amongst all the courts we've heard from so far and the four again today are staffing concerns, technology concerns, security concerns, construction concerns, delayed hearings, delayed due process, increased benefits, structural deficits, cash flow needs. All of these can point to the loss of a budget that we used to enjoy in order to provide public access. Access, not coffers overflowing, but access. And fund balances were used to anticipate needs to the courts, that the courts could take care of themselves without the bureaucracy of coming up and through to get approval of the need to expend money and to get that money in order to do so. And so it's sort of fitting that as we end a judicial council season and we have old members who are leaving who have much experience and knowledge and are probably a little bit road weary from the years of challenge that you've had on council, we have new blood coming in. But it seems like over the last 5 years that our struggle has always been the same, and it is about our budget and protection of it and the rebuilding of it, not for ourselves, but about public access and for the people who work in our courts who deserve appropriate pay. And so as many times as we hear this, I just want to say that we are still sensitive, we are still vigilant, and we are still passionate about remedying these wrongs. And we will start again in September, anew and fresh, with the help of the AOC, with the help and knowledge of many of you as we go forward to continue to try to strike these worries from our list one by one. We're at this port. Yes, Assemblymember Bloom.
Thank you, Chief, and perhaps that was a good tee-up for my comments. I think the main thing I wanted to say is how helpful it is for me, even as a practitioner, and having perhaps a better than average understanding of the workings of the court and the impact of our budgetary issues on our courthouses. It's very helpful for me to hear these reports from around the state and the very real impact that our budget issues are having on the services that are provided to the public. And I'm wondering, I think it would be very helpful for my colleagues in the legislature to be hearing, particularly from their individual jurisdictions, about these impacts. I'm wondering if there isn't some way, I hate to ask for more from your beleaguered staff, or maybe it's already being done, if there isn't a way to quantify on a spreadsheet that lays out for each of our 58 counties some of these some of the good stories, but also some of these very dire impacts that are affecting the delivery of justice around the state. It was a significant item as I was listening to these presentations to hear that there are security issues in our courthouses. That should give pause to everyone. The final comment I want to make is that I've heard a number of times about the legislature and how the legislators need to hear the concerns that should be expressed and the concerns that people have with the legislature. I'd like to point out, I think that is a significant concern, and you ought to continue to have those concerns, but I'd like to point out that there is another branch, the executive branch, that needs to hear these things as well. And so I think if I could suggest a mantra to you, it would be to talk about the legislature and the executive branch. We are obviously three very important branches of our government, and I think the messages need to be heard amongst all three.
Thank you, Assemblymember Bloom. That's very helpful to us. We're grateful that you're here. Thank you.